time for the In the Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
This is Damian Lemon, and this is In the Conversation, the podcast. Yes, yes, yes. This is Damian Lemon. Ali is away, so it is you and I for another one-on-one chop up. You know, heart to heart, kick it. I hope you're doing good. This is the last day of 2025. We about to put a bow on this and throw it under the, I was about to say throw it under the tree. I guess you could say it was a gift. Every year, every day is a gift, even if it was turbulent. I don't know how your 2025 was. I don't want to assume. Mine was cool. I had a decent 2025. I won't lie. I enjoyed it outside of all of the, you know, the political shenanigans of it all. You know, it kept it very interesting, kept it very infuriating if you chose to engage or you chose to just be triggered. But, you know, if you listen to my voice and you make it to when that ball drop, we done did it. We done did it. We are in the home stretch. We're about to cut through the tape, and we're going to start a whole nother year, 2026. Wow, 2026. I just got used to saying 2025. 2/5. 22/5. 2026. Wow, that's crazy. I've been living for a long time, yo. I've been living for a long time. I see quite a few dates. Quite a few dates. Remember when you were in school and you had to put the date on the top of your paper when you first came back, you know, after the new year? And maybe for a while you, oh, dang, I put last year's date. I don't know if y'all did that at your school, but that was a thing. You know, but wow, 2026, the future. The future. The future's about to be here in a couple hours, on a few hours. You know, y'all got plans? Y'all got plans? What you doing? Oh, wow, work? That's great. Okay. Spending a lot of money. All right. That's what's up. Okay. That's fire. Yeah, nah, I don't really have many plans, to be totally honest with you. I think I'm going to just keep it low. I like to keep it low during the New Year's, on New Year's Eve, more often than not. Unless there's like a real cool turnkey house party, something chill. I don't like being out in the street on New Year's Eve. I feel like it's amateur night. I'm definitely not trying to get into a club on New Year's Eve because you're going to get gouged. You know, that's where they're going to beat you over the head. Same club you could have went to last week. It's at least five times the price to cover, or you got to buy a bottle or two. The bottles are way more expensive. Everything is way more expensive. Everything is way more heightened, you know, just till that midnight comes in. Then it's the regular-ass club. I remember years ago, Shout out to my squad, my 224 squad. We were out in London. We was out in London. My man Mingo, my man West Manchild, my man Chad. It was the four of us. We were out there. We did a London and we did an Amsterdam, but we were in London hanging out on New Year's Eve, trying to get in a club on New Year's Eve. It was a whole fiasco. I think we got in. The line was stupid. We finally got in. I had my man Chad, he knew somebody over in London, you know, like a big wig in the London scene, so he got us in the club. I mean, it was crazy outside. It was super fucking cold. It was cold as hell. It was so cold. I remember, and that might have been me that came up with the bright idea, but I remember saying, yo, whose bright idea was it to be in London or Amsterdam of all places on New Year's Eve? It is cold as fuck. This is ridiculous. It's unfamiliar cold. It's one thing to be in your own cold climate because it's cold in New York, but at least New York got your house if you live in New York or wherever you are. If you familiar cold, it's different. But when you abroad cold, I don't know. Maybe that's just, I don't know. Maybe that's just the Negro in me. But to travel to a colder climate, it doesn't always add up. But anyway, it was cold as hell. The line was ridiculous. They were holding the line, you know. But we finally got in there due to, you know, a phone call and, you know, somebody put in a word, whatever. We got in the spot. When I tell you that shit was empty, it was terrible. It was the illest bait and switch of all time. I wasn't the last time I went to the club on New Year's, but that was one of those where it really hit me. I was like, this is ridiculous. This is crazy. I can't even believe it. We just looking at each other like, damn, this shit is a dud. It was a super dud. We tried to make the most of it because that's what you do, especially if you all the way across the pond, you know, like you try to make the most of it. So it was what it was. But I hope y'all make the most of it, whatever you do tonight and whatever you do with 2026. And like, you know, here's to good health and prosperity and bigger and better, you know. I got a question for you, though. Like, if you were DJing a New Year's Eve party, maybe you might be DJing. You might be a DJ right now getting your Serato ready. I was about to say getting your crates ready, but that's very old school. But getting your Serato ready. What is the record that you gonna play when, you know, when 12 o'clock hits, when midnight comes in? What you gonna bring in 2026 and what is the record? What's the record? You know, like, what is the record? I'm curious. I don't even know what I would play right now. I'm trying to think of some of the, I don't know why this stands out, but I remember, oh man. So it was a Tony Yayo. Oh, nigga, do you know what this is? I forget the name of it. G-Unit. It was one of them with the crazy drums. I remember being at a party and they dropped that shit at 12 o'clock and it was rocking, believe it or not. That shit was rocking. I was like, ooh, that shit was crazy. Yeah, that was a joint. Yeah, but I it's been a minute since I've been in the mix on a New Year's Eve. I kind of, like I said, I kind of keep it quiet. Quietly, not even quietly, but truthfully, I be trying to just get into the new year like it's a hot club. I just be trying to get past the velvet rope, leave 2025 and just eke into 2026 because it is not guaranteed. I like to lay low and just have a safe little transition into the new year. Yeah, wanting to be in the house on New Year's Eve is not always the most popular, but I don't care. Sometimes it's looked at as boring. Damn, you ain't doing nothing. You ain't gonna do nothing for the new year. Come on, shall we supposed to be out there? I've had those. I don't get New Year's Eve FOMO. I've been in the world. I've been at the ball drop a couple times, shivering, looking stupid. Nah, not really looking stupid. Actually, I used to do that. I did it a couple times, at least a couple times, high school and college. Be down there with, like, I remember in high school being down at Times Square for the ball drop with, like, a $6 bottle of E&J to the head. Just wilding. Shout out to my man D. We was wilding, yo. It was a crazy time. I remember this was one of them times where, I don't know for what reason, some cat was running around with a box cutter just slashing people's, just their, like, their little goose, you know, their geese, their bubble, you know, their bubble coats and shit like that. You just seen goose feathers flying all over the place. It was crazy. Fortunately, nothing like that happened to us, but it was a wild time. Hell yeah, actually, and I'm thinking about it, yeah, I got some flicks from a couple good New Year joints. Yeah, that classic. So again, I do not feel like I've missed out. I did it. I had a good time, you know, and I hope y'all having a good time, whatever y'all doing. If you the type, do you have any New Year's? Well, okay, we talk about New Year's resolutions in a second, maybe. Yeah, we will. But do you have any New Year's traditions? Are you somebody, you know, do you need to do the Hoppin' John? Do you need to make, You need to do the black eyed peas with the cornbread and the collard greens. The green represents the money. Are you one of these people that goes through the door backwards? Or I forget it's something with women, like they're very particular about the first dude that they let come through the door, and you know, all of this other thing. It's some interesting traditions that go on. Do you have any superstitions or any weird traditions that you use when you ring in the new year? You know, are you one of the people that go get you some noisemakers, kazoos, and you know, some party favors, and you know what I mean? Do the, you know, get your little your glasses, your New Year's glasses. That's always fun. 2026 glasses seem like they would be kind of fly. I think some years don't always work well with the glasses. They figure it out, but some years I think some numbers kind of, they're a little bit made. I think there's enough rounded edges on 2026 for a nice pair of glasses. So that's cool. Yeah, do you have any resolutions? You know, any that you want to share? You know, or do you keep them close to the vest? I don't really like to shout out too many resolutions. I don't even believe, I just do goals and things like that. I don't make it too crazy. You know, like I try to just stick to the script, look at what I was trying to do and just continue on, you know. I do think one of the goals for this year to continue is just to way more active on social media. Whatever that looks like, I still have to figure that out. And that's just me bullshitting. But active on social media, because that helps build an audience, gets the people out. What else? Think I'm gonna get rid of shit a lot easier. I'm not a super hoarder, but I can lean towards the sentimental over some of the most ridiculous, inconsequential objects and items in my crib. I've been getting rid of a lot of stuff over these past few days, so I feel good about that. You know, so I'm throwing things out. Getting the world, hanging out more, kicking it with people, like just throwing it on the calendar. I think for me, if I throw some shit on the calendar, I'm more apt to do it. But not even just that, but just staying in the world a little longer. I'm one of these people, I'm cool with a U-turn. You know, I'm out, I go to where I need to go to, but I'm quick to just get back to the crib for no real reason. Even my family was like, yo, why you always leaving so fast? I'm like, I learned it from y'all. I did. I learned it from my sister and my brother-in-law. They are the ultimate U-turn cats. Now they feel away when I be pulling off, you know, go home and enjoy the rent. Enjoy my rent, as the people say. But, yeah, man, be in the world. See what happens, you know. Because this life, you know, this is a gift. Every year you get, this is a gift. I don't want to get all saccharine and shit like that, but you know, 2026, we here, or we about to be, you know. I'm trying to think if I'm going to eat anything particular for 2020, you know, for New Year's Eve. Do it, you know, I'm going to set something up. I don't even know what I'm going to do. I'm going to be at the crib, though. You know, I'll be at the crib for sure, but I might, you know, program and have something nice to eat, you know, maybe a nice libation, a good libation, something elevated, not a cut water, you know, but I've run through quite a few cut waters since I discovered them. I'm not going to lie. Quietly, they are the infinity stones of alcoholism. I've at least tasted 6 flavors, at least. Let's go through them. I've had the White Russian, because everybody was saying the White Russian is good. And then I realized I'm not a big fan of vodka and milk. Shout out to Prodigy. I had the Mai Tai, the rum Mai Tai. I had the lime margarita. I had the mango margarita. I think I had the strawberry margarita. Where we at? 5 already? Leave that concern to yourself. I seen the Long Island iced tea. I didn't jump out the window on that. And maybe I've had some others, but you know, yeah, I think I'm good. I think now I'm gonna get back to what I used to like about what I do like about those little canned cocktails. It's just that they do all the work for you. Just crack the can and pour that shit and let it be. But I'm not gonna lie to you, even though I don't drink as much as I used to, I do like to fix up a nice little drink, you know, especially with the with my own, like the liquor that I like, you know, and just if I got all of the fixings and things of that nature, you know, I put it together as nice as, it's a nice little, nice little libation. I like a nice something to sip on. That's kind of cool. I'm not sure what I'm going to eat yet. Got to figure that out. I might do some grocery shopping maybe early in the day. Try to beat that little New Year's Eve rush. This is real. I don't know if y'all really want to hear all of this shit. I will say this though, because I do. I want to know what y'all do. Do you have anything that you need to have? Like that's your go-to. Every time you go to the grocery store, there's something that you gotta have. I'm gonna tell you this. I'm a cashew head. I love cashews. I like the. I get the whole cashews, the unsalted from Wegmans, the big boy container, and I tear through them shits. Cause that's just something that I like to. I could eat those and don't feel too bad. I do those. I do some popcorn. I'm trying to, you know, chill on like the sugary shit. I still wild out a little bit, but I'm trying to, you know, be mindful or whatever. You know, as cat get these years under his belt and gets to see yet another year. You know what I mean? I try to respect the vessel. The fuck. I want to shout out everybody that came out to Eastville last Saturday for the, you know, rocked out at Eastville. I did a, it was my last long set of the year. And it's always cool to do a long set in New York. You know, I do them on the road. In New York, you know, it's mostly like showcase shows. So you're doing 15, 20 minutes here locally, working out shit or, you know, whatever, doing a little medley or whatever. But when you could kind of just, you know, just stretch out and, you know, hit them with the hour, the 45 to the hour, it feels good. I ain't gonna lie, I was a little anxious about it. I had just done a long set last month for the New York Comedy Festival, Uptown at Comedy in Harlem. Shout out to Comedy in Harlem, Jamie, Nikki. That was fun. That was a cool time. I get, you know, in New York, sometimes I get a little, like I said, I get a little anxious when I'm at the crib, when I'm doing the full hour, just because, I don't know, it's home, you know, and I want to rock that shit. I want to go hard. And I got people coming out that know me, you know what I mean? That know me from wherever, far back as elementary school, far back as high school, you know, things like that. People I used to work with at older jobs and things like that, the people. You know, the people that know me, the people that I know. So it's interesting to see, you know, family in the crowd. It's you know, it's still something that, I don't know. I guess I struggle with it a little bit. I've gotten way better at it, but it's taking time, you know, for sure, if I'm being totally honest about it, you know. But, yeah, it is what it is. You know, because I think there's a bunch of reasons, but one of the things that I think is like, you know, I come from prior, well, one, I'm just an opinionated dude. Y'all know that. Y'all listen to the pod. You know what I mean? I got opinions and shit, and I got takes. And I used to have, I used to do, you know, reviews and you know, all types of things. I was a critic. You know what I'm saying? I was a critic back in the day. So there's a part of me that feel like I got some karma coming. You know what I mean? I might have said somebody's album was whack. And nobody was to be deemed whack. You know? So there's that. It's like, the criticism of it all or whatever. And also, I think there's this thing where, and I've discussed this in therapy. I've discussed this in therapy where it's like, sometimes I don't look at support. I don't take support as love. I look at it as expectation. People be like, yo, you know, especially when you first start in comedy, people be like, yo, nigga, I'm coming to your show, nigga, you better be funny. You're like, all right, bro. Like, I plan to be whack. You know what I'm saying? Nobody does that. It could happen, but anyway. So long story short, I was a little in my head, but it all worked out. As more often than not, it all works out. I've realized, I've accepted that as part of my process. Just a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of dread. But when I hit that stage, I do what I need to do. So it was fun. You know, shout out to Crenshaw White, who hosted. You know, shout out to Chris Lambert. He came through, featured, you know, rocked out, got busy. And then, shit, it was your boy. And we had a good time in there. You know, salute to Eastville, you know, the whole staff over there, you know, peace to Marco, giving me the opportunity. That was fun. That was a good time. What was also interesting, and part of the reason, because it was last minute, but part of the reason why I did it was the show was December 27th. December 28th marked 20 years since the first time that I got on stage. My first open mic was 12/28/2005. I remember it. I can remember it clear as day, damn near. Nah, maybe not day, maybe dusk. A little foggy. But yeah, December 28, 2005, Sal's Comedy Hole in the Village. That was the first spot that I ever got on the mic and like really just said, fuck it, I'm gonna do this shit. And when I say I said, fuck it, I'm gonna do this shit, I mean in the way of, like, I had wanted to do comedy for a while, you know, like I guess I had aspirations. I had friends, you know, like, yo, you should do comedy, you're funny, you know, all of that. I used to, you know, talk shit in the back of class. You know, since I was a kid, since I was young, I've always just been a fan of comedy. Always like, you know, getting a laugh when I figured out how to get a laugh. It wasn't anything that I looked at as a career path initially, or maybe it was something that I didn't really fathom or might have been a little reluctant to claim. But after a while, I remember, years before I jumped on stage, I used to, speaking of New Year, right? As the New Year would come, I would always write a list of, you know, goals of what I wanted to do. And it had to be at least maybe 3, maybe even 5 years. It was year after year after year. Somewhere on that list would be get on stage, you know, and I would write little jokes here and there, little things that I thought was funny. Like, I was writing early, right? And anytime I seen comedians, you know, I would ask them, yo, if I wanted to get into comedy, what kind of tips do you have? You know, all of that type of shit. You know, people to do the research before they really jump in. What kind of tips do you have? And more often than not, comics would be like, you just got to get on stage. That's what they would say. You just got to get on stage. And I used to always feel like that, you know. I used to kind of feel like that was just a bit of a brush off. Like, all right, y'all. I mean, I get it. I mean, that's where you do comedy, right? On stage, right? But I feel like, damn, thanks for nothing, you know? Couple comics gave me a little bit more insight, you know? I remember, well, okay, I got two things. First of all, there was actually a point in college where I thought I was going to do it. I had the opportunity to try comedy and I fronted. And I kind of was beating myself up for years over that. Damn, dog, you fronted. You had the opportunity right there. You should have jumped on. But I, you know, me and my man, shout out to my man Rashawn out of South Carolina. This was in college. We were at like a little dorm event. And I don't know if we made a pact to both go up on stage, because we both was real funny cats on campus. And he went up before me. And I'm not going to say he did bad. I don't think he did good. It didn't go the way we all envisioned it. And I got my Homer Simpson on. I disappeared into the bushes. So I kind of fumbled that opportunity. And for years, I was like, damn, dog. See, had you started way back then, you could have had a few years on it. You know, that whole thing. Anyway, I started when I started. But what I would say was, I circled around it for a while. Like I said, asking a bunch of comics, yo, what should I do? I remember being at the comedy store and I asked Corey Holcomb. It's like, obviously, over 20 years ago. I said, yo, And he gave me good advice. Not advice, but he said something that was deeper than just get on stage. He was like, when you get on stage, you will realize everything you need to know once you're on stage. You will figure it out then, you know? And in retrospect, I totally understand what that all means, even to get on stage. It sounds like a brush off, like I said, but the truth of it all is you have to be on stage to do this. If you want to do comedy, if you want to be a stand-up comedian, you got to go on stage. There's no other way to do it. You know what I mean? You could be funny in other capacities, but if you're doing stand-up comedy in the traditional sense, you need to be on stage in front of a live audience and saying the shit that you wrote or saying the shit that you came up with and finding out in real time, faster than the internet, if that shit is funny or not. You know? You could rehearse in front of the mirror. You know, you could try to, try out jokes on your friends in conversation and see what it is, but it's nothing like being on stage and getting those laughs, those crickets, those boos, whatever. You know, like it's you gotta be in it for sure. You gotta be in it. And yeah. So December 28th, 2005, that was the first time I got in it. I went down to Sal's Comedy Hall. And it's funny, I think the week prior, I'd gone there and just scoped it out, you know, and didn't sign the sign-up sheet. And this week, I remember clear as day, I remember taking a shower, coming up with, like, going over what I was going to say. Like, I was really priming myself, like, yeah, I'm going to go up. And I had my little couple jokes and shit, and I'm doing this shit, like, I'm going to say this, I'm going to say that, you know, all of that. But I still was, you know, reluctant. I was still a dude at the edge of the pool, scared to jump in. I get to Sal's, and you had to go downstairs. You had to go downstairs because it was a comedy hole. It was in the basement, like good comedy clubs. It was in the basement. I'm almost at the last step right before I get into the little small showroom. And whoever, I don't know who it was, but whoever had the sign-up sheet hit me right before I could get off the steps. Yo, you signing up? I was like, oh, shit, I couldn't dodge it. I was like, oh, I just signed my name. And I just sat in the crowd, and I waited for them to call my name, and I remember being nervous. I remember being nervous, but I was the type of nerve. I was so nervous that I, like, I don't know what this was. I don't know if this was some yoga shit, because I'm not even a yogi, you know, but I found myself, like, you know, taking, like, deep breaths, and I was taking so many deep breaths, not hyperventilating, but, like, just, like, trying to calm my nerves that I damn near, surprisingly, almost fell asleep. Like, I started getting, like, lethargic in there just to quell the anxiety of it all. And they called my name, and I went on stage, and I guess I had 3 minutes, maybe 3 minutes. I don't think it was a full 5 minutes. It's like 3 minutes. And I launched into my little 3 minutes of material, the shit that I practiced in the shower, the shit that I've been writing in my book, you know, all of that. And it went okay. It went all right. I caught a couple laughs. I'm sure, and I would have to find it. I know it's somewhere. Maybe I don't have it, but I'm sure I would cringe a bit if I heard that first set now. But it was all I needed. That 3 minutes was all I needed to get in the game. I was in the game. I felt a relief, you know, because now I'm not dancing around it. And it was just like, I was like, yo, I want to do this again. You know, I want to do this again. And I will say from 05 to 07, I was very sporadic. I didn't go for broke. I wasn't compulsive about it. I wasn't like, you know, week after week or day after day. Like, I would go there. I would let time go by. And then after, you know, time would go by, you know, the longer I would wait between shows, the more nervous I would get back on stage. And that would kind of, you know, spook me or whatever. And then I'm not sure at what point I had my first bad one. But I definitely caught a bad one. And when you catch the bad one, it's like, ah. That really make you like, oh, you got to go back to the drawing board and figure it all out. But I remember around that time between 05 and 07, Shout out to my man Rip Michaels. Rip Michaels, he's a comic out of Chicago. Real funny dude. You know, he's now, I think he created the Wildin' Out Tour. You know, he worked with Nick Cannon and all of them. He does the Wildin' Out Tour. He does a bunch of stuff. He's a hustler. He's a funny dude, but he knows how to make money in this shit. He knows how to move around. He knows how to create opportunities and all of that. So, but he was one of the cats that was like probably one of my first comedy Sherpas. You know, he take you to the spots, because the thing about when you first do it, you don't really even know. Comedy is like such an underworld. Like, there's the comedy clubs, but then there's so many like little rooms and bars and lounges that have comedy nights. And it's a landscape that's just, you would never know unless you in it, you know? And he was like, yo, let's go here, let's go there. Like, we go 4 or 5 spots in the night, you know? And some of the wildest, toughest rooms. I remember going to Footprints, you know, going to Footprints. Footprints was, man, Footprints used to be hard as fuck. Freddie Ricks would host that joint. The beauty of Footprints, it was all Caribbean crowd. You know what I'm saying? Jamaicans, Trini, you know, mostly like a Jamaican, West Indian, you know what I mean? Crowd and shit like that. And shit, it could be tough. But the beauty of it was, if you went on stage, you got a free meal. So even if you bombed, you ate good. So yeah, there was times where niggas took a L there, like, but take a L, then and Rip be like, yo, we going here now. You like, oh shit, nigga, I just caught a L. Nah, we gotta go here. We going here. He was like a conditioning cat. And I remember one time he was like, dog, you still do comedy like you got a day job. I remember that shit that stick with me. I was like, damn. I had to really let that kind of soak in, because I get it. I was on some halfway shit. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't all in. Like, you know what I mean? It was a halfway crook. And so I went ahead and shit, got laid the fuck off. It's funny too, because a lot of people think in my narrative that I just quit and just pursued my dreams. And there was a part of me that wanted to do that, but, you know, salute to Bev. Bev was like, don't quit. Fuck that. Don't quit. Get fired. So if you get fired, at least you get you what is that shit? Damn, why can't I take it to John? You know, what is it? You get a severance. You know, shout out to Severance. I don't watch the show, but you know, I know it's popular. Yeah, you get fired. Yeah, you're going to get a nice little severance, and that should help float you. So, yeah, I remember. And then after that, 07, I was all in. I didn't have a full-time job since. I haven't had a full-time job since. I had a couple side hustles for sure. Some weird side hustles, some bug-out joints. I used to do, like, these little open houses for this management company. Do these little open houses that used to be super boring. I just sit in a empty apartment for like 5 hours. And if anybody came in, I'd walk them around the apartment or whatever. And if somebody rented the apartment, I get a little bonus. It wasn't no crazy money, but it was something to do. Had a lot of odd jobs, dog. I did some promo work. I'd done promo work way back in the days, but then I started doing like the weird promo work. I remember doing some promo shit for Metro PCS, and that shit felt like a humiliation ritual. They put you in the whole Metro PCS outfit, which is fine. I'm doing promo. I don't mind having a t-shirt on or whatever, but they had this little hat that you had to wear that was a damn foam board that just said Metro PCS. So you wearing basically a billboard on your head. It was stupid. I'm out there fucking Jamaica Avenue just looking crazy with this damn billboard on my head like a nut, looking crazy. I think it was like $20 an hour. You know, it was doing whatever it took just to make ends meet and to keep it going. And it was tough for a while, you know, because comedy, you know, and I was in a relationship with my ex, you know what I'm saying? And like, shit, sometimes money be funny, and it is, that could be a tough one. But the thing about comedy too, especially on the come up, is you see it before everybody else sees it. You see momentum being made that might not be financial gain, but you notice, yo, you on lineups with better comics now. You know what I mean? You're not doing as many open mics. You're not doing as many bringer shows. You starting to be on lineups with motherfuckers that's on TV, or there's people that's known, or people that are, you know, big dogs in the game. So you know you making strides. The money ain't all the way there yet, you know. It was a grind, you know. Shout out to my man Vlad. Me and Vlad, we created Comedy on the Hump. We had our own weekly show. I tell all new comics, get yourself a show so that you have a residency, because when you first do comedy and people want to come out and see you, and you hitting them with them real sporadic dates, yeah, I'm gonna be there January 13th, and then I got a show on February 7th, and maybe a show on, them people ain't gonna remember all that. But if you somewhere every Wednesday, if people really want to see you, they'll be like, oh yeah, they over there on Wednesday. They there Wednesday. They got that Wednesday night. It makes it a lot easier. You become a resource within the community, other comics, you're giving them stage time, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, me and my man Vlad, we had a show called Comedy on the Hump at the defunct Long Closed Laugh Lounge on Essex in the Lower East Side. That shit was fun. A lot of comics that you know that are cracking now were on that show. Yeah, we used to produce that show every week. And we would swap. One person would host, one person would headline. Basically just go last, you know. And then, you know, we was just out there hustling. We would fucking drive 2-3 hours. I remember us driving all the way out to Allentown, Pennsylvania for like $150 to do a show at a college, Cedar Crest or whatever. Like, you know, be so happy that we was on the road, quote unquote. This is when I was in the old Corolla with like 250 something thousand miles on that shit, hoping that we made it back, you know, shit like that, man. Comedy, man, it was a good time. A lot of ups, a lot of downs, a lot of cool shit. Got to open for Aretha Franklin, you know, pretty early in my career. It was decent. Got booed at Madison Square Garden. That was devastating. But that was part of the thing. Wound up on television, you know what I mean? Did a couple TV shows and shit, and a few movies, and you know, some cool shit. Got to travel the country, travel the world just off jokes, you know? I mean, got to shit. I've been paying my rent for years off of comedy. So, you know, 20 years in, it's a beautiful thing. I'm still processing it. It's crazy to think that I'm a quote unquote vet in the game. I got 20 years in. 20 years, these motherfuckers typically retire from a city job, get you a pension. You know, I got 20 years in this shit, and hopefully I get another 20. You know what I mean? Like, I hope I can go even further. You know, I'm still learning every day. You know, still getting up. And I hope, you know, better yet, I work at getting better. You know, that's the goal. I'm still trying to be great. You know, like, I got in it too because I was inspired by funny, great motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying? So I don't really try to shortcut this shit. Like, I love the game. So, yeah, 20 years, it feels good. It feels good. I can't even lie, you know? So, yeah, I forgot to say that shit on stage at Eastville. That was the whole reason. That was the whole reason I took the gig. So I could kind of, because I ideally wanted to be on stage, you know, that Sunday. But I wasn't booked, and I was a little tired. And I was going to just go to an open mic just to do it. But then I was looking at the little schedules and shit. And then, you know, I was like, fuck it, nigga. And I had shows the next day. So, I mean, dog, I guess that would have been more ceremonial. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, I forgot to tell the people that shit. But, yeah, 20 years in the game. It's wild. It's wild. And I'm happy to still be able to do what I love. You know, even when the shit gets tough or even when the shit is, you know, the business of it all. You know what I mean? Like, it's still, I talk shit for a living. You know what I mean? Like, when I think about it, that's wild. Still, that's wild. But that's that, you know. That's it, man. I ain't got too much more. I just wanted to kind of, I guess, you know, unpack that. You know, thank y'all for listening. We're going to make this one a quick one. We got 2026 to get to. You know, I know y'all got to go ahead and get everything. Get your tux on. Get your gown on. Whatever you going to do, get fly. Or maybe just get your couch ready. You know. But I appreciate y'all support. You know, and the comedy career. If you ever come out to a show, you ever bought a ticket, I definitely appreciate you. I appreciate y'all for listening to the pod from the beginning, from the triumphant era. You know what I mean? Be Vlad and Muhammad. You know what I'm saying? To now. But as always, tell a friend to tell a friend. And even an enemy to get in the conversation. Come on.
Hello.